What do you do during a day like that? What did you do? I want to know what everybody did in this room during a moment like that, because it's very, it's unexpected. It's bizarre. If there's a lead up to it. Like, I was working on a project at the beginning of that game. It's like, all right, afternoon baseball, guys like us, because we wake up so damn early. It's like, this is great. 1 o'clock in the afternoon, away they go. And then you get some offense going, all right, things are looking good. Here we go. Angel Martinez. Yeah. And then as the game goes on, you start to go, hey, this is kind of fun. And we're getting closer and closer and closer. And then there's like, and I don't want to do too much of this right now because I want to focus on Gavin and everybody's experience during that moment. But there's also the conversation of, can I say it? Can I not say it? Who can say it and who can't say it? Who should say what? What can they say? Well, what can they not say? Like, there's a little bit of that. But, like, when do you start to realize it and how do you start to take it in? Because man, it was pensive where I was sitting yesterday watching this all go down.
Well, yeah, yesterday, so I'm dialed in early to this game thinking, well, there's no way we're really going to sweep the Mets in that lineup, and you're going up against, you know, good pitcher, all-star lefty. Like, there's no way they're just going to come through. We're not this good to just pull off. I don't care what condition or state of affairs the Mets are in. And then the second inning, you know, Gavin goes out there, walks one. Then there's a wild pitch to advance the runner. Then, all right, he gets it out. Then there's another walk. And you're like, all right, he probably doesn't have it today. Okay. So then I end up having to leave the house, running some errands. And, you know, you're paying attention, but I'm not as dialed in because I saw that inning and I'm like, oh, it's just probably going to be one of those days. That turns out to be his best game ever, which is just awesome to see how he settled down. And Austin Hedges actually had a great thought about, you know, when he went out there to the mound to talk to him, he's like, hey, dude, you know, your body language is horrific. And you know, this show, we monitor body language unlike anyone else.
We do.
It is Cleveland's premier body language.
It is. Yeah. So after that, he obviously got into a rhythm. You asked the question, Ken, about how we were all taking it in. Were we refusing to say it? So I have three major text threads that started populating, and everyone was just like, hey, might want to tune into the game, and then eyeball emoji. And so it was, the stance was set, like nobody is mentioning this.
I had to be somewhere at 3:30. I watched the last 2.5 innings of this game in my car on my phone and pulled over into parking lots.
Yeah, I have to.
To watch it until the homer.
Yeah.
But I definitely, I was like, I have to get there. I have to get close to this place. I walked into my meeting a few minutes late. It was okay, but I got to see it. But yeah, you're right. It was not really talking about it, just kind of going, put your eyeballs on it, right?
So yesterday it was 1 o'clock. Game started 1:10. We had to work on a project yesterday for high school football. And all the systems, in like the minute we were getting ready to roll the cameras, the moment it happened, everything crashed. Internet crashed, everything crashed. They got it back up, it's crashing. And I just decided, I was like, well, I'm just going to sit down and watch on my phone. And so you're watching the first few innings while they're working on stuff, because it's like, well, the only thing I can do is get in the way. So I sat down quietly and watched as much as I could, because I wanted to see. I was like, hey, if they get a sweep, like this is big. They might only be a few games back. There might be only one game back of the wild card, and just over a handful of games now in the Central Division, because Detroit lost yesterday. So what, you're 6 games back of the Central Division now. So like, you can kind of see them as they're looking at you in your rearview mirror. So now we can talk about that coming up later on. However, like, I'm watching, and honestly, it didn't really click until like inning six, it starts to go, well, because you don't want to get your hopes up too soon, because there's been guys who have done it. And also there is the factor of guys get pulled now. Like, if it's not a perfect game, guys get pulled. Like, oh, you only had so many pitches. You can only have so many times we throw you out there. So guys get pulled. So then you don't want to get your hopes up too much. But I got to tell you, by the time the 7th, 8th, and 9th came around, because we got everything working, it wasn't that long of a project to work on. So I'm sitting there at my cubicle, and like, the whole area is watching on TVs. And it was almost like an old-style baseball game. Where, like, remember I told you in the 90s, and old guys will tell you this from way back in the day, but in the 90s, like, you would ride your bike down the street, and the Indians were amazing, and you would hear Tom Hamilton like out of every garage. Like guys were working in the middle of the summer on stuff, and you'd hear doubles, triples, home runs, everything going on in the out of every garage down the road.
No singles. He never mentioned them.
No, never did. Never got really excited over those. But yesterday, it was like on every TV. And then when Juan Soto hits the home run, there's like this immediate, and then it's like, well, what an outing. What a great.
So it was disgust.
What a great.
It was disgust when he hit a home run. Because I actually felt like this was going to happen. I actually got to a point in my headspace. I've always done everything I can, downplay the expectations. It's not happening. This is going to get broken up in the seventh, the eighth. And then when you get to the ninth, now we've been here before. Like we have gotten here. You had your share of terrific, one in particular, terrific defensive plays to keep this thing going that made you think, hey, this could actually be history. I mean, it's all the way back to the year I was born. Less than a month before I was born was the Len Barker perfect game.
Yes.
And so it's easy for me to always remember. It's my age. That's how long it's been since we've been able to do this. And it's the longest current drought in baseball. There have been three other droughts in the history of baseball, lengthier than this one. But this one is up there. We did wonder a few years ago, it was like 8 years ago. Did it seem like there was a no-hitter every week in Major League Baseball?
They had a weird run of it.
Yeah. And then we're like, oh, when it happens, is it even going to be as big of a deal?
The Guardians and the Indians still, but it was like 2021. I think they got no-hit like four times.
Oh, my God, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's right.
And there was also the changing of the baseball because, you know, Major League Baseball is a company that makes the baseball. So there was the changing of the baseball and how that happened because you can't have too many. You really can't have too many no-hitters or it kind of takes away from the specialness of a no-hitter, even though we're a team that hasn't had a no-hitter in over 6,000 games.
Spider tack and all that stuff.
Yes, all that other stuff. They took that away. They made it harder on it. So it makes the accomplishment of nearly a no-hitter that much better. But I went through a whole range of emotions right after. Because at first, I'm like, man, effing Juan Soto. And it goes back to Game 5 of the ALCS last year, where it's like, this guy does it again. And remember, I was all critical about it earlier this week when Hunter Gaddis was out there against Juan Soto. And then I did have the thought that came to my mind.
Then he was staring down and preening, and that made you so much more disgusted.
That made Mets fans mad. That made Mets fans mad.
Well, it seemed like they were on our side.
Well, I know, because there were people going, this sucks. Heads need to roll. Like, I got Mets buddies, because, you know, FAN and Infinity, and you got the same thing, where we got Mets buddies who are like, finish them off. Heads need to roll. This is enough. We're spending so much on this roster. Like, they talk about not getting their money's worth on their roster. Like, that's their big fight. And seeing that, like, they were mad that he kind of pimped the home run. And there was, when he came out, like there was a nice ovation for Gavin Williams, which is kind of the fun thing about baseball altogether. But I went from really, really mad Juan Soto hit the home run to going, at least it wasn't some call-up from Syracuse. Is Syracuse their AAA team, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I was like, at least it wasn't some call-up from Syracuse. Like, it could have been worse. It could have been some stupid call-up, and then... Like, at least it was, like, he's supposed to be.
Yeah, but you hate that it was him.
$765 million.
Just like, because of what he did last year in the playoffs. Like, it's tough to get over that. And it's in some ways, he's been indicative of the payroll narratives that we've had that we'll never have a chance to have that guy, even though it seems like the Mets fans aren't even thrilled with that contract right now. It's always been that guy is like the face right now of the haves versus the have nots in baseball. And what he did to you in the postseason and now what he did to you to break that up. That's why I use the term disgusted. Now, the other flip side of this is what a weird time that would have been to make history. Middle of the day like that. People are at work. How many people would have told us today that they saw it when they really didn't? Like it would have been just would have been a fraction of the people that would have watched a normal game. And I kept thinking, is this the way we're finally going to get a no-hitter and nobody's going to see it? Let's be honest. It would have been less than 10% of the normal Guardians.
Well, I think it's in the back of a fan's mind, games you can't see. Like obviously, like if your team's out of it, and the Guardians are usually in it. So it really isn't applicable to a Guardians fan. But if your team's out of it, you kind of, all right, we're going to go get ready for football and basketball season. That's going to be the end of it. So you don't watch as much. There is, I think there is in the back of somebody's mind, games that they really are just forbidden from seeing because of maybe work or anything like that. I think there is a hope where either you win or lose, but nothing crazy happens so you don't miss anything fun. So there might have been something where somebody did know or didn't know.
Well, it was an away game, too.
You want your team to do it, but you want to be able to see it. And it was an away game as well. And so, I like, with us, when they play on the West Coast and they have, like, a 10:05 start time, it's like, just give me a nice 3-1 win. And let's just make this quiet. Nothing stupid going on out here because they're on the West Coast, and I got to be up in, like, 2 hours, and this sucks, and just get on with it. I think for a regular fan, if you didn't get to see it, maybe there was a tinge in the back of your mind just hoping, all right, maybe this is just a really great outing because I'm not going to get to see this now, and I'm really upset I'm not going to be able to get to see this. So when Juan Soto hits the home run, it's like, hey, my pitcher who's young had a really great outing. See, this is what the beauty of it is. My pitcher who's young had a really great outing. We still won the game 4-1. No big deal. No hair off anyone's ass. You're still a game out of the wild card, right? I left it up. Didn't see it this morning.
I left that game thinking
things I looked up.
One thing that I don't know if you're going to hammer me for it.
Okay, what?
I left that game thinking the Guardians have a better shot in my lifetime to win a World Series than we do a no-hitter.
That's fine. I'd still rather have a better shot to win a World Series. I don't, if they win a World Series, does anybody care about a no? Like, did anybody care that there was no no-hitter or no perfect game since Len Barker in 2016? No one thought a damn thing about it.
Every time we get into the sixth inning. I mean, remember, it was 2015. It was Carrasco. Yeah. His got broken up in the seventh?
No, he made it to the ninth. Carrasco had one with two outs in the ninth.
You are right. It's a cool thing to see. It's a cool thing to see, but I'll take winning baseball games. I don't need to see anything as far as a no-hitter. It's cool. Congratulations to Gavin Williams for coming close and having a good outing. It's weird to congratulate a guy on something that he'll forget in 4 days. I don't care about any of that stuff if they're winning baseball games. Everything's about winning baseball games. Like, still, again, it's 4-1. You win the baseball game. You look at what they've done here over the last 25 games. They've been fantastic. You've actually beaten a team that much is expected of the New York Mets are 63-52 overall. Like that, because you can sit there and go, well, your strength of schedule is terrible. Nah, a lot of people thought that the Mets were going to be a formidable opponent, and they are. And you pounded out a 3-2 win the other day, and then you get this win yesterday. I think a lot of people are just feeling great right now about where the team's going. And I'll continue to say, it's in spite of what the ownership allowed you to do, because you did nothing in the offseason. You did nothing at the trade deadline, but take away from this baseball team. But still, I don't care about the ownership in there, and I can still root for the guys that are in the clubhouse.
I think those are fans caught in arguments. I'm not thinking about payroll right now.
Well, I know you're Anthony Dolan.
Not while this team is making a run like this. It's so funny. Somebody said, somebody was arguing, I think, with you on social media yesterday, and I saw what they wrote, and I'm like, what a nice kind of psychological elixir. They're like, Ken, just imagine all these players are making $30 million. Just like that with a magic wand. If you just thought that in your mind, then it would allow you to watch these games and enjoy what they just pulled off, which was supposed to be the hard part of the schedule among a slew of winnable series, winnable games. And now this team continues to win series. They continue to win games. They have the best record in the American League since the All-Star break. I'm not thinking about ownership payroll right now. It doesn't come up in my mind right now.
But I'll tell you, I'm not upset that they won. Certainly not. But I can tell you this, that I'm enjoying what they've done. B, we said at the trade deadline, no one's raising a white flag. This isn't a raising of the white flag. You were going to get rid of Shane Bieber. That's the way it was going to go. So it wasn't a white flag on the season. So nobody on this show said that. Second of all, and the third thing of it all is that, hey, when you sweep a team that has a payroll, what is their payroll this year?
I've seen anywhere between $320 and $340 million.
Okay, $320 million. When you sweep a team that has a $320 million payroll, don't tell me you don't feel a little bit better about that. Don't tell me you don't feel a little bit better about that as a Cleveland sports fan. Or at least a Cleveland Guardians fans. The other two teams, they spend all the money in the world and they have a capped game. You do feel a little bit better about that.
Well,
I feel better about the future of Gavin Williams.
There are people
about
we argue with that just try to tell us every day if they just spent another $20, $50 million every year, we'd have all these World Series. And I'm like, man, there's so many teams that have done that and don't win the World Series ever. Yeah. So
the Mets don't have fallen out of their pockets. So, you know, I can understand that.
We're okay with him being out there for an individual accomplishment. No one's saying that we're not. It's just there is an approach in baseball in recent years that has definitely shifted and changed. And I do think a lot of this was sparked by Johan Santana going out there at 134 pitches. I remember, Ross Stripling, very first MLB game ever, okay? Dave Roberts, after seven innings of no-hit ball, was like, Ross Stripling, you're not going out there anymore. Like, you're done. We had a pitch count for you. I don't care if it's one of the coolest things that could potentially happen in baseball history. A rookie with a no-hitter in his very first outing, we're not letting you do it. Like, and so it's like it's shifted and it's changed. People have, they have pitch counts on these guys. They know what they can and can't go to. And when you enter the inning at 111, when the most he's ever thrown in an inning, Nick, was 109, he's going to be locked in for potentially 15 to 20 more pitches. Like, there's a risk there. And it seemed like Vogt really didn't care about that risk.
So, I like that he went out there. And we talked about the bullpen thing. There's a part of me. Do you like that Steven Vogt's like, oh, I just completely avoided him? Like,
no,
it is the, for the love of the game,
him.
Nobody talks to him with Billy Chappell.
But it's such a baseball old school way of thinking that we just kind of need to get corrected. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I get it. If you're Arias, maybe don't talk to the pitcher because that's how superstitious baseball players are and that's how this isn't until the end of time. But like, wouldn't you want to check in on Gavin Williams and be like, hey, how's your arm feel? Even so you can get the assurance that he's going to lie to you and tell you that it's great. At least then 10 years from now, if he's signing no-hitter baseballs, but his arm is in a, you know, had two Tommy John surgeries and never recovered, he can't be like, yeah, nobody checked in on me and I was obviously in a lot of pain and wearing.
I mean, I will say, if he's being serious about not talking to Carl Willis even, that feels a little too, I'm trying to be old school in the moment.
I mean, he went as meatball as you could possibly get when it comes to this whole entire equation. And there's probably 90% of our fan base that's like, I'm happy that he did that. Listen, it's cool that you have a chance to go for a no-hitter. It would have bummed everybody out if he threw eight innings of no-hit ball and then Vogt was like, he's at 111 pitches. He's never thrown that many. I can't have him out there.
So I don't want to go too heavy on the criticism here, because it was a fun game. They just swept the Mets. They got the White Sox coming up, and they are knocking back on the door of the AL Central and certainly on the wild card. These are things that should not be diminished as we talk about this today. That being said, a criticism I feel that I have of Steven is I think Steven is very much, he gets wrapped up in the emotion of the game. And I think if you're a little tight sending your guy out there, or if you're the, I'm not going to talk to my guy at any point during this potential no hitter, at some point, I feel like you acting differently than you normally act might make that pitcher tighten up a little bit too.
Maybe. I wonder how far he would have gone with it. Like when we talked about it in the sixth inning, then Gavin came out and had a nine pitch seventh inning. And it was like, what if that was reversed to being, or not a nine pitch inning? What if it was like a 29 pitch inning or a 21 pitch inning or something to the extreme? I want to know how far Vogt would have gone, because based on the comments, it seems like he would have just, as long as there was a zero in the hit column, it would have just been okay.
So do you have, where's the limit there?
Well, so we know, like, it's not like it's like a guessing game. We know at 130 pitches, there is a real opportunity that you can do damage to your arm. Like, again, we've done a lot of research. It starts in the 115 range. When you get to 120, you're really threatening things. But 130 is, there's sirens that are going off. That's why, like, again, this is not a guessing game. We've done the research on this. That's why it was such a crime of sorts that he didn't have anybody up in the pen ready to go instantly to take him off the moment that he gave up the home run to Soto.
I also think, and again, I'm going to be the body language police, after he gave up the home run to Juan Soto, you could tell, I think he was done. Meaning, like, I think he was, like, spent, like, okay, I was giving everything I possibly had. Soto teed off on it. We got two outs to go, and he got didn't he get the next out?
And then they put the runner on base.
Oh, that's right. And then they put Gattis out there.
Mm-hmm.
But Carl had to come out,
and Carl had to like talk and like try to delay and try to extend time in order to get Gattis up and to be able to do that whole thing. It's a fascinating discussion, and it's very interesting to me just from a baseball manager standpoint of what they do, because there's a lot more managers right now that wouldn't let him go out there and do that ninth inning and go for it than would the way that Vogt did. It makes for a fun, entertaining day, though.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, on one hand, I applaud you sending him out there. On the other hand, Steven, have somebody up in the pen. I love the fact that fans get super, super tight about, hey, we feel the tension. There's a no-hitter here. I don't love that the manager did. Like, so we're weird. Like, it's a great game. It's a great series. And that was one of the all-time cool performances. I really feel for Gavin because it would have been awesome to have him be the guy to do it.
Yeah.
Because he's got such a great chance to be the ace of the future. I'm a little surprised at how post this thing. I'm still a little more annoyed at Stephen Vogt than I realized I was.
It's interesting. It was a great game. It was a great series. And but I love this. I love these are the little things about baseball. People, if they think we're being down about it in any sort of way, this is the fun part about baseball to me.
Matt, in a car. Welcome to the show, buddy. What you got for us?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing very well.
All right. First off, you got to tip your hat to Gavin. I think what's frustrating for a lot of us is, this is kind of like what we expected from Gavin for a few years, and it seems like he's finally kind of putting it together, and, hopefully it stays that way. I know Kluber was kind of a late bloomer, too, but, not saying it's going to be Kluber, but, can't say I've been upset with him. Like, he's been one of the few bright spots, I feel like, kind of amid, this kind of tumultuous year, but I gotta tip my hat to the Mets fans, and, much better than their counterparts on the other side of New York City. It seems like they have a little bit more class as far as, respecting our players, not throwing garbage at our players, Yankees fans. But, I think just what we're seeing, though, Vogt seems to just not know what he's doing as far as, getting a feel for the game still, which is a little concerning with, the pitching changes and bullpen use, and it kind of had the whole feeling of almost that Johan Santana no hitter game where after he gave up that home run to Soto, is he just going to leave him out there to just finish up the game? And it's like at some point you just worry about injury, and here's hoping, obviously, Tigers are doing their part. If we sneak in the playoffs, you don't want Gavin, who at this point might be your number one guy right now, the way it's going, him or Slade. You don't want him gassed for a stretch run.
Matt, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you very much. We asked, how are Mets fans reacting? Like, if you're a Mets fan in the ninth inning, do you want to see your team be no hit? Or do you want to play the spoiler there? And you mentioned Frank the Tank from Barstool.
Yeah, always just melts down in just a fantastic way.
So we've heard that he melted down, but we're not sure what he melted down over. Was it the loss? Was it Juan Soto? Here's Frank the Tank.
That's it. You seen that? This is the worst Mets team I've ever seen. Juan Soto sucks. They have no fucking heart. No fucking grit. Nothing! No life is f***ing over! They're gonna get swept in Milwaukee! They don't even give a f***! I don't even mad at this team! This team just charges me every f***ing year! They don't care! Overpaid f***ing bums! I'm f***ing tired of this f***!
Sounds like John Fanta with Guardians fans like 6 weeks ago.
Oh, man. That's the state of New York Mets baseball right now.
By the way,
the Guardians broke him.
How about a screw Juan Soto? Breaks up the no-no, which would, listen, you get no hit at the end of a three-game sweep by the Guardians, who you have a better record than. I mean, I guarantee you Mets fans thought going into this series, we got this series at the very least, then to be swept by it and finished with a no-hitter. And, by the way, the guy that you mother bleeped was the guy that then broke it up. An interesting turn.
Doesn't matter. That's how New Yorkers think in many ways. It's just like they don't even care about the home run. Why didn't he hit three of them prior in that game? That mentality is hysterical to me.
It's funny, because Willie P, our buddy, was on it at 2:40 today. He's a Mets fan. Believe it or not, yeah. I have several people that work at WFNZ. My boy Itty Bitty Fitty, and several of these dudes are Mets fans.
Fitty?
He looked like Scott Federer's illegitimate son,
naturally.
The former Panthers GM. Yeah,
okay,
yeah, but balding at 26, you get it. But I've spent enough time around Mets fans that our buddy Matt was like, there's a difference. Yeah, Mets fans are better than Yankees fans. I'm like, they're the same side. They're a different side of the same coin. Yankees fans think they deserve everything, every championship ever. Mets fans to think they deserve everything the Yankees get.
They're both New Yorkers. There's no real way to dress it up.
You want to say they're Jagaloons, don't you?
No, not really. I like the there's parts of the Mets fandom that I enjoy because the Mets have always been kind of
losing.
They've always been overlooked. They've always just kind of been an afterthought in many ways in that city. I've had a soft spot for the Mets. That goes back to maybe like the Mike Piazza days for myself, though. I don't know.
And your friends with Willie P. Tom and Menor, welcome to the show.
Uncle Nicky, Tommy from Menor here. I got to throw it out there. JP, always been a fan of yours, even back to the overnight days. Glad you made it to drive time. Sorry, what do you call Uncle Nicky, push out Dustin. He was a great, great guy as well. Couple of things, though. I've never heard JP so negative talking about the Guardians or literally about Stephen Vogt. I can't go ahead and believe it. If he'd have gone ahead and taken him out in the ninth inning, you'd be up in arms that he never gave him a chance to go ahead and make history. I'm shocked by it. I know the channel is against the Guardians because all we talk about are the Browns and our fifth-round draft pick for a quarterback, how he deserves a shot even though nobody else would give him a chance in 136 spots before that. But I can't believe what he called for the greatest the guys are playing in July and August. We're not giving him some more props. I hope you guys turn around and get a little positivity going towards the Guardians. Uncle Nicky, you don't want to listen. JP, you're better than that, buddy. You're better than that.
Tom, I was letting him
Tom,
go.
Tom, we appreciate it.
I said it's fine that he put him out there for the ninth. It is a weird bugaboo of mine. I don't know why, and I don't know where in my baseball life I just became really precious towards pitch counts, and I became really precious towards making sure that the arms don't turn into the ticking time bombs where they just explode. But at some point, it did happen for me.
It's when you moved to NoSo.
I don't know. I don't know when it happened.
You tasted those elite waters of North Solon.
This is well before NoSo that I started caring about pitchers' arms and pitch counts for some random reason that I'll never be able to reconcile with. But I think it's because we have so much science and we have so much information backed up as to when these things start to occur and when they really hurt and damage these pitchers' arms. And in this instance, and in the argument for just let him throw the no-hitter, we always just blatantly ignore that. In the case of, well, one game is awesome. And I get it. One game is awesome, but it feels very in the moment. It feels very self-satisfying for right then. And I've never begrudged a manager or a pitcher for being like, listen, if my career stinks after this, at least I got a no-hitter. Like Phillip Umber pitching a perfect game, that's the only thing he's ever going to be remembered for. But Gavin Williams has a chance to become a Cy Young winner one day. Like he's got a chance to achieve all these dreams and more. I would hate if, you know, vote at 135 pitches was like, go out there and get the job done. And it hurt him for the rest of his career. I would hate that.
All right, there are three things from the call.
One, I would hate that.
No one has ever called me Uncle Nicky, and I'm more offended by that than anything else the man said. I sound like a bad gangster. Like the kind of gangster that gets whacked very early on because he's just incompetent.
Reminds
Sorry.
Me of,
we had to take care of Uncle Nicky. He just wasn't working out.
Reminds me of Little Nicky.
Yeah, that would be another one that I wish not to be called. Two, I did not push Dustin out. And that's very funny because, like, if I did.
I like that you need to clarify that for people.
I'm also the reason he's sober. Yeah. Yeah, if I'm going to get credit for pushing him out, I made him so healthy, he realized he wanted to leave Radio 3. We can't be against the Guardians when this show talks more Guardians than anybody on the station.
By like a wide margin.
By like a significant margin. So rejected on that one. And the Uncle Nicky thing. That just doesn't make me very comfortable there. We got to get to Ja'Marr Chase saying something he can't take back in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
I was going to do it out of spite because I had other points to make against a argument I heard yesterday afternoon during afternoon drive about this almost no-hitter and how Stephen Vogt handled it. I'll get into all the minutiae of that coming up later in the show. There is one thing, though, what I loved what Stephen Vogt did. Here is Stephen Vogt after the game talking about, was he looking at pitch count? Did he even talk to Gavin?
One of the things, you look at the velo was still there, the stuff was crisp. I didn't dare ask him how he was feeling. I didn't talk to Carl or Albie the whole game. It was one of those things with a four-run lead like that, you got to let him go. You don't know how many chances these pitchers ever going to have to do it, so he was going to get to go the whole way.
Listen, you ain't got, and there was some criticism yesterday afternoon about it, and I'll get deeper into that coming up later in the show, as I just said. Respectfully, of course. But you don't have much to go on.
with this team. You have a chance here. You're looking at a chance here where everybody's in. Everybody's buying into this. You're playing good baseball. You're back. How many times have you seen it so easy where teams can just call it a day and you're out there playing out the stretch? You're not doing that. Here you have a golden opportunity dropped in your lap. I mean, I've been critical of him. We were critical of him during the beginning of the 10-game losing streak for not going out there and getting himself thrown out when Jose Ramirez got thrown at. Because he should have went out there, raised hell, got himself thrown out of the baseball game. It's a cheap pop, but it worked. This, it's like, hey, I believe in my guys. I'm putting my guy back out there. In fact, I'm a former catcher. I just stopped catching a couple years ago because he's a young guy. If anybody is supposed to know how to handle a pitcher, it's supposed to be a catcher, and he handled it the right way. That this is, hey, this is a Gavin Williams win. This is a great win. Vote win. Definitely a vote win. Marked in the calendar, Tone.
Or a Hedges win, too.
Hedges win as well. You want to put that in there? Fine.
So I totally agree with you. And look, this is, I know in sports, we're all trying to get smarter. And this is something that probably, if you've heard, you know, anyone talk about basketball, it's become nauseating over the years about, well, this is the formula. This is how you win. Shoot the three. Shoot as many threes. Then the coach after the game. What does the coach say after the game? Oh, well, we got good looks. We got good looks. And it becomes nauseating because you're like, well, you have to learn how to play other ways. You have to figure out a way to not be a slave of the numbers. Well, finally, here in baseball, we've trended towards numbers, 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 everything, either strikeout, home run, that's okay. Line them up, keep swinging. And it's like, well, sometimes you got to figure out other ways to win ball games or to just revert back to baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's this sport that we all played first growing up. And what's one of the things that we all thought separated baseball from every other sport, which is gut feeling. Sometimes the manager just has to have a gut feeling. And yesterday, your manager, and tell me what plays in a clubhouse better than this. A manager rode his arm. He rode his pitcher. And he even admitted after the game, he's like, I didn't talk to him. And I know in the afternoon show was like, what? What do you mean you didn't talk to him? And he's like, yeah, I'm a catcher. I didn't talk to him. We didn't have all the communication. Sometimes you get bogged down. It's paralysis by overanalysis. Yeah, you could have those guys sitting there on the bench in the clubhouse, biting their fingernails, trying to avoid the elephant in the room, and then seeing that pitching number go up and go up and go up. And we all saw he struggled in that second inning. So there was a lot of undue stress because of the two walks, a wild pitch and everything, but he settled down. And you know what? You had a manager dialed into one thing and one thing only yesterday, and that was his players. He listened to his players in a way. I know it sounds crazy. He didn't talk to his catcher, but he talked to his pitcher, but he listened to his players. Yesterday, you had a manager that I think bought himself even more credibility with the rest of his team by not doing what all these managers are doing in baseball right now, which is to show me the number. Anybody can do that. Guys, anybody can manage from their radio studios from 2 to 7 at the Halley Building. Anybody can do that.
Oh, the gloves are off.
That's the easiest thing in the world. But why do we pay you?
I wanted to save it.
Why,
go ahead.
Why do we pay you? We pay you to have an understanding of your baseball team. And right now, this
I thought you were talking
manager,
about why do you pay the guys from 2 to 7.
No.
I'm like, whoa.
This man. No.
I like to hear your thoughts on that.
They, you know what? No. They deserved what they got paid yesterday because I got fired up. I got fired up listening to Jonathan and Nick because I'm like, man, they just rode Gavin Williams. Ooh. He might have yesterday. I don't want to be overreactionary, but it's going to sound that way. Ooh, yesterday, he might have became the ace. And you know how I know that? Because the manager trusted him.
A lot of people are saying it.
The manager trusted him to go the distance, and thank God they gave him the chance.
A lot of people saying
it. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Now, that being put out there, I had to ask the question on Twitter, because there's two superstitions in sports that I really hate. I think that, like, Punxsutawney Phil. Punxsutawney Phil's cute. You go out there, you sit there, it's just like the movie, and you got, what, Andy McDowell who's in the movie with Bill Murray, and you go out there and you see the groundhog, and it's a giant rodent, and people like to go through that superstition and that whole tradition. I like ghost stories, I like the macabre, I like some of the other things. I mean, there's a lot of fun to superstition that I have. Two things that annoy me. One is the Madden curse. There's no curse on a video game. The other thing that annoys me is yelling at people for saying no hitter. I was getting tweets about Tom Hamilton saying no hitter. And my thought was, guys,
don't be blaming the play-by-play guy over saying no-hitter. There were people who were annoyed that it said no-hitter alert on the broadcast on the lower third.
Even though they're not talking about it, you can see it.
Yes. That all said, I still won't say it. I still don't want to be... I don't know why it seems so stupid. It probably is stupid to be that way. I'm annoyed by anybody who gets annoyed by it or gets upset and says that you're going to cost our team, you're going to jinx our team, but I still won't do it. I still can't bring myself. Like yesterday, I had somebody go like, all I'll say, Kenny, as we came back in from the studio, all I'll say, Kenny, is there's been a lot of outs in a row. And in my head, I'm like, well, just tell me. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to say it, so why am I just going to tell him?
Well, Anthony Alott was doing the updates yesterday during the afternoon show, and he was kind of dancing around it. I don't think he used the term no-hitter. Now,
what does a young kid like Anthony Alott do in that situation? Because it's like, hey, Tom Hamilton has gravitas. If you're critical of Tom Hamilton, you can go cram it with the walnuts ugly.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
So. Hall of Famer.
That's a Hall of Famer saying. But Anthony Alott's just starting out. Anthony Alott's just a pup.
I heard people talking about how Tom was addressing it. Everybody has their way to do it. But yesterday, Nick and Jonathan were kind of questioning how Anthony was handling it, too. And he kind of hung in there steadfast. Like he was not tough. He didn't say no hitter, right, Mitch? I don't think he said no hitter at any point.
He could say that he's technically a journalist, a Big J journalist, a Silver Sal Award winner, and say that he has to give the news. Where's Jeff Thomas? I might have to bring in Jeff on this.
And we need the veterans.
Because I need the veterans. But I also think that the veterans are in a different place than where the young guys are. You may cave to the pressure. I also know that, hey, you know, we're not talking about tariffs and hostage negotiations and things like that. This is professional sports, for crying out
loud.
And
that's part of the fun,
maybe
though.
It's part of the fun is that you don't mention that it's a no-hitter.
Again, Stephen Vogt didn't even talk to his pitcher yesterday while
Hedges
this was going on.
To his pitcher yesterday, and Hedges was the one calling the signals and saying, Gavin brought that up, too, in the postgame. He goes, it's not like he was over there going, okay, now we need three more, young kid. Get out there. Let's throw two curveballs and a slider.
You know what? That is one thing that is such a throwback in baseball that I do love. That's something as ridiculous, right? As ridiculous as don't jinx a no-hitter. Don't upset. Don't awaken the baseball gods. Like, I kind of love that. Once in a while, it's fun to get silly about this stuff. We don't have to overanalyze and look at a pitch count number.
Are you saying that they shouldn't do it? Or are you saying that that's part of the fun?
I wouldn't do it if I were doing, man, it's been so long since I've done baseball and I didn't come close to having a situation
like this. I was never in
the
situation, no.
But
I always wondered what I would do.
I would do everything. Maybe I'd get a little too cute dancing around it, and maybe some people would be frustrated by that, but I'm not ever using the term no-hitter.
Right now it's 60-40 that says that you can jinx a no-hitter by doing that. By outside people saying that. Which I don't think Bob Feller's up in heaven giving a damn what I have to say about a no-hitter, right? It's like he's not going to strike it down and say that you're not going to have a no-hitter. But I do think there is a little bit of a difference. Like, I don't know if Jeff can hear me. Would Jeff say no-hitter during a game? Has Jeff ever said no-hitter during a game?
Hello, Ken.
Hi, Jeff. I didn't know. I know you work on things, so I didn't want to like call
that's
you out
okay.
on anything.
Well, I can tell you, I used to do Akron Zips baseball games back in the day, and there was a situation. It was a seven-inning game, and a guy for the Zips had like a no-hitter through five. So I said on the air, look, it's going to happen whether I say it or not. So I said, hey, guy's throwing a no-hitter. And granted, the next inning, he lost no-hitter. And this was back in the old days when it was just Lee Jackson Field. There was no ballpark on campus. You're basically sitting behind, you know, the dugout area. I got some dirty looks from the Zips. But you know what? Hey, either it's going to happen or not happen. I mean, a damn whether I say it or not. So, unfortunately, he lost it. I didn't lose it for him.
Did any of those guys go on to be major leaguers?
Thomas loss?
You know, I just think that's your job. When you're doing a game on the radio, I don't fault Tom Hamilton at all for saying it over and over because you can't see what's going on. He has to tell you what's happening, which is what I was doing on the radio. You got to tell folks. If a guy's throwing a no-hitter, you got to say he's throwing a no-hitter.
But also at the same time, Jeff, okay, and I know we got to go, but I got to think about it like this. You've been doing this a long time. Tom Hamilton's been doing it a long time. Is there a difference, do you believe, between like you, Tom,
Anthony Lant, who's just, he's just starting out after college.
Let's just start there. Anthony's a child.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
He doesn't know a damn thing. Why we hired him, I still don't know.
He needs
a mentor, Jeff. He's a good young man.
Where's he going to find one?
He found one right here. Right here. Me. I'm going to be Anthony's mentor. Better start eating, kid.
Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan, 216-474-0092. Dan Menigan. Standing by with any other updates if they happen from Carolina.
I have them right here if you would like. Joe Flacco is up with the ones right now. Completed a deep ball to Jerry Jeudy. He had a one-handed catch on a crossing route.
Oh. Super Bowl, Super Browns.
Not ours.
Shedeur Sanders was up with the twos. Had an incomplete pass. A run flagged for holding. Short run to the right and a short completion on a drag route. So a little bit tougher there. Flacco back up with the ones. A little bit shakier from what this is going. Again, grabbing this from Daniel Oifusi of ESPN.
Look at this. All this important stuff going on. Can we come up with our own rhythmic chant? Is anyone in favor of that? Jeff says no. Dan says...
Read that tweet. Read that tweet.
That's all we need right there.
All right, fair enough. I like it. All right, can we switch gears here for a second? Let's talk... we'll talk Browns throughout the rest of the show. We'll give you every update you need. Anybody comes to the podium that's... super important. We'll get to them a little bit later in the show, too. Gary Barnage, former Browns tight end, will join us at noon.
Former Panther tight end as well.
Oh, that's true.
Both of his teams.
Chris Easterling, Akron Beacon Journal, 1 o'clock. So, yeah, Barnage, we'll get to hear from both those. I wonder if he's... Remember all the cool things he would do when he was in town? He ran out movie theaters for fans, and what a good dude. So he's going to join us at noon. We'll talk to him about, you know, what it's like to be in a camp like the players are in right now. With the Browns, Guardians, man. This ride has been really fun. Yeah, I know maybe you might look at the competition and go, well, they're not playing the same competition they were during that 10-game losing streak. But they are winning the games that are in front of them, and they've been doing it pretty well. That was at 18 of 20.
They're 18 and 7 in their last 25.
So fair enough. So there you go, 18 of the last 25 games. They're now sitting... a game and a half back on that final wild card spot. The Rangers are a full game ahead of them, and then the Yankees have the last spot. So if you're looking at standings, it's the Red Sox are plus 3.5, so they have a 3.5 game lead on their playoff position. The Mariners are now plus 1. They headed into the weekend. They were either tied or just on the outside looking in. The Yankees have lost 5 straight games, and they have fallen to 60 and 54, and they are now just a half game ahead of the Rangers, who are pushing them for the third playoff spot, and right there, the Guardians at 1.5, a way out of the wild card race. Kansas City has dropped off at one point. I think they were a game or a half game behind the Guardians within the last 5 days. So great game last night. And, you know, they play again today at 1 o'clock against the Mets. You know, you looked at this series and you said, okay, we've been playing teams that perhaps aren't the best teams in Major League Baseball. Well, guess what? The Mets are one of those teams that are tough to beat. They've got a big payroll. And last night, Jeff, that bullpen looked great.
Did a nice job, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
And Cade Smith coming in late, getting it done. The other guys in the bullpen had pitched in 3 of the last 4 games. And that was a bit of a problem for them. And then they go to the bullpen and bring in other guys, and they all did the job. And Matt Festa, Kobe Allard, Jacob Junis did a really nice job. Credit to the front office for rebuilding yet another bullpen on the fly. They did a really nice job with that. And I give tons of credit to the pen. Logan Allen kind of gutted it out for 5 innings, wasn't as sharp as he usually has been. But there was a story on MLB.com by Bill Ladson, who covers the Mets. And he pointed out, the first paragraph just cracked me up. Guardians have often proved that a team doesn't have to hit the ball hard to score runs. He said, entering Tuesday's game, Cleveland ranked last in the major leagues in hard hit rate at 35.9.
Is that really a thing?
You're darn right it is. But guess what? You take that and you add it to this. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
30th, dead last in batting average. 28th, third to last in slugging percentage. 28th in OPS, on base plus slugging.
So how are they winning?
26th in on-base percentage, 26th in runs scored. And yet they've won 18 of their last 25 games.
How?
I'm not gonna buy the whole guards ball thing. Mm-hmm. If you watch the inning where they scored their third run last night and took the lead, C.J. Cephas had a dinky hit, followed by Brian Rocchio with a dinky hit, followed by Stephen Kwan with a dinky hit. But guess what? The key word there is hit. They were all hits. They were just little ground balls or little flares that dropped. It's been pitching, Andy. Their starting pitching has been very solid, and their bullpen has been more than solid without Emmanuel Clase.
I wonder how many teams use as many pinch hitters as we do. Every day you look in the box score, there's always at least two pinch hitters.
You see how many players the Mets played last night? 9. They didn't change anybody. This team uses pinch hitters because Stephen Vogt, whether you like it or not, is managing the snot out of this team. Why? Because he really doesn't have a whole lot of everyday players. At least that's my thinking.
Yeah. Does anyone think it's a... I said this yesterday to Hoynesy, and to me, it just shows improvement. You know, at one point, we were talking about having a lineup that had 5 guys hitting under 200 on it. 5 in the lineup. So if you look at all 9 slots right now, and Cephas is... I mean, does Cephas even have 15 at-bats?
Too early.
You know, he's only hitting 167. So, you know, really the only guy out there last night was Naylor at 179 right now. He had 3 at bats. And then he got pinch hit for Fry, who's hitting 172. And then Hedges comes in the game. If he would have had to have hit, he's only hitting 133. So that was at the 6 spot, 5 spot, 5 spot.
I have no proof of this. The one thing, as you said, using pinch hitters and everything else, and yeah, they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what impact that philosophy has had on some of the guys not hitting. In other words, I wonder if Nolan Jones would be hitting better if he had more at-bats. It's really tough to be in there. You're in there, then you're sitting. Then all of a sudden you're pinch hitting, then you're out, and you don't play the next day.
I can't believe I'm going to say what I'm about to say.
It's not just him, but it's a bunch of these guys who are doing that. Schneeman was hotter than blazes.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't play him the next day. He had 3 hits 2 days in a row, and then he sat.
Yeah, I don't understand sitting somebody every day. But I think if guys believe that they're going to have the opportunity to pinch hit later in the game, rather than thinking the manager's sticking with 9 for the day, that I think you do have a little bit of a different attitude when you approach every game. You may say, okay, I'm not getting 4 at bats today, but at least they're going to give me a shot at 1. And I could. And
that's normally tough, though, Andy.
I know, but normally you'd look there and you'd see a guy has a hit and a home run earlier in the game. You're like, oh, there's no way I'm pinch hitting for this guy. And then, boom, you end up pinch hitting for that guy. And we all look at each other and go, why the would you pinch hit for a guy that has 2 hits in this game and 1 went out of the ballpark?
Schneeman was 6 of 9 in the last 2 games against Minnesota. 6 hits, 3 games, 3 in each game. And then against the Mets in the first game, had 1 at bat. And last night had 2 plate appearances. He walked once, he struck out once, and then got pinch hit for. So since he got 3 hits 2 games in a row, he's had 3 plate appearances. That's tough. I mean, how do you build on being hot? Well, you don't. You've got to try and stay hot without at-bats. That's really difficult to do. And I wonder, you know, we keep seeing, hearing, reading, people sending me emails, boy, Nolan Jones looks like a ball player, but he's not hitting. No, he's not. I keep wondering where his power is. I wonder, you know, can Nolan not play very well anymore? If that's the case, he won't be on this team next year.
Well, that's true.
However, I wonder if you'd have given him regular at-bats all season, would he be up there a little bit? How that guy has only 3 home runs, I don't know.
You beat the Mets twice in a row. Do we feel like this is starting to – are they a playoff team?
Or who a playoff team?
The Guardians.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's a maybe. It's a hard maybe, too. It's not a, like, you could see this thing, you know, going ugly, but I don't think so.
Pitching's been good, Andy.
It has.
The key is still the pitching.
Again, I can't say enough good things about that bullpen last night. I mean, they shut them down. Well, who would have thought that they were going to only end up with 2 runs? You know, and then they'd come back to win the game as well.
And think about it. Of the four guys who pitched out of the bullpen last night, only one was with this team last year, with this organization.
Kate Dan, you buying their playoff team right now? They're only a game and a half back.
Sure.
I am too.
I mean, you got three wild card teams. Why not you?
Every chance.
I'm happy. The more I think about it, I'm just happy that they basically did nothing but, you know, shave some cash off the bottom line at the trade deadline. They kept Kwan. I've been reading. I think everyone's kind of speculating still on what the trade offers were, but I think you hit the bottom line right, Jeff. Not about Kwan. But if your closer was still eligible to play baseball, you would have brought back a gigantic haul.
And I bet you would have moved him.
And this is what nobody wants to hear, and I'm not trying to downplay anything, but it will be taken that way. During that losing streak, you ran into a lot of really bad luck.
Bad luck and good teams.
Right now?
Well, they played some pretty good games and lost.
Exactly. Right now, you're running into some really good luck. I mean, the fact that David Fry bunts a ball in the air that doesn't get caught and then thrown away in an extra innings game kind of tells you something. Like
to Lindor, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. So where before you were running into some really rotten luck, now you're running into some good luck on top of that.
There are a couple series coming up as I was looking ahead at the end of the month. So they've got the Rangers and the Mariners. And then I normally wish like that you end the season against an AL Central team, but they end the season against Texas, which is the team that they're on their heels. And might not want to get too close to the Spurs if they're in Texas.
But
you know, they're a game behind them right now. This has been exciting. I love this. I love what they're putting out there right now. And
I don't, but I love the results.
I don't know. I kind of like it.
The offense drives me nuts, Andy.
Are you expecting home runs all the time?
I'd like to see better offense. Nothing wrong with that, I don't think they're capable of it.
I mean, I don't.
The way they're playing is working. So good. By the way, John Kenzie Noel was 3-for-4 last night.
There you go. Bring him up.
Not yet.
Not what? You going to bring him up soon?
No.
The only way he's coming up is for injury. Is that what you're saying?
Probably.
I would think so. But you just took 2 out of 3 for the Mets. And I don't think anybody expected that.
And you could make it 3 of 3.
I know. Let's keep our fingers crossed. MLB Network today, too, for them as well. So that's a 1-10 start for the Guardians and the Mets, and they'll play this afternoon. All right. Big media happening over the last 24 hours. We'll talk about that. It seems like the deal is done. So we'll talk about that. Gary Barnage coming up at noon. Chris Easterling, 1 o'clock. Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan.
Those were also really damn good.
It was fantastic.
But and cheddar, come on.
It makes me want to get back into beef jerky in some sort of really expensive way. And, I mean, it's very healthy for you.
You know this. Max thought I was talking to him. Max in the Lodi area had the best jerky ever. They had a great amount of flavors. They had the best Smokies ever. And while I have had my share of fine jerky since they closed, nothing beats Max. And I will tell you, I've been waiting. We've been driving around. I've been scoping out, like, do they have good jerky? Do they have good jerky? I have not found.
Joe's going to be very disappointed with that.
You know, I can't drive to Wisconsin every time I want some jerky. You know me. I need the immediacy. Actually, Joe, you need to sell that here in stores because I would buy that.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know why he doesn't have like a local store set up.
Oh, like almost like what did Chad Dukes used to have? He's a DC host. He had like a outlet store.
He had an outlet store?
Yeah, not an outlet store. No. What's the a surplus? Not a surplus store. There's a Country Goods, something like that.
I didn't know this. I knew they had the beer.
Yeah,
which I think is awesome that a radio show just had enough people that listened, enough people that liked it that they could have a beer. I think it's great. It should be a goal for this show, if we're being honest.
I'd rather have a jerky.
There's something cool about like a Friday night, though. People just popping open some afternoon dry beer, little afternoon drive IPA, and just starting off their evening.
Okay, but you can only have that certain amount of times. You could have the Nick Wilson jerky, Nick's meat, and JP's meat.
Yeah, I was going to say, now it's the Nick Wilson jerky? It's not the afternoon drive jerky?
No. It's like...
The ego on this guy here, Mac.
I think you missed it. I would have one that fits my taste profile, and then you'd have one.
And we would compete to see who buys more of which one.
No. I don't know why my voice did that. I know. I'm like offended.
No.
I am offended that you're saying this because I just want the best for Nick and JP and our meat.
I want the combined show meat is what I want. Well, if we're going to go down that road, well, I want the show beer is what I want.
The point is not all the show meat's going to taste the same.
I want the show beer over the show meat. But if you gave me show meat, then first off, then we're competing with Joe Thomas, which is not great. We're going to lose that battle.
You're going down, Joe.
He's not got really. The Wagyu beef. He's got way more invested in this than
I like
we
how
do.
You said the Wagyu beef like it's the Home Depot.
That's how I say things. I'm really trying to put the emphasis on it.
But no. You're missing it. Like, Joe has apple cheddar meat snacks.
What's our flavored meat snack?
I would do a nice, like, a Hawaiian flavor. If you've ever had one of those for, like, jerky or smokies, you could do... Salt,
I'm thinking like if Ron Swanson had a meat stick, right? It's called meat stick flavored meat stick.
Yeah, that would be you.
You get the meat stick flavored meat stick.
And then you'd be like, if you want flavor, you go to Nick Wilson Town.
If you want the Hawaiian flavored meat stick. My meat stick flavored meat stick will outsell your Hawaiian meat stick.
You've clearly never had my Hawaiian meat stick. I've never had.
If you'd make it for me, I'd gladly have
some. I don't know how to because Max closed. It closed.
So they made it. They made it is the point. And then you'd flavor it. Is that what you do?
Yes, I would. Mm. Yes, I would. Okay. Well, no. They would make the flavor of the meat, and then you would just eat it.
Mm.
And then we ate the meat.
What other things could we get going?
I'm really stuck in this beef jerky idea. I'm trying. Nobody's going to want a beer. Nick Wilson clothing line.
No, that's not going to be a thing. Like, we're not selling shoes. We're not selling shirts. That's not really us. It has to be some sort of food or beverage.
That's true. We really are dialed into like one section here.
What's our version of an Arnold Palmer?
It's a drunk on Sunday.
Something like that.
Maybe it's Friday.
We call that the John Daly.
Yeah. A drunk on a weekday. And it's just, you guys are just going to drink a lot of White Russians. That's where it is. So the problem is there is a show on the station that would drink beer, but their choice in beer is very rudimentary.
Oh, what show is that?
That'd be the morning show.
Well, how is it rudimentary?
Because he would try and make it Pabst or Busch Light or something like that instead of, like, you know, a great beer. Because he would try and, I got the most working man beer here so I can pander to everyone, whereas I would want you to have a beer that actually tastes good.
Pew, 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 pew.
Did the tiger get out of the cage on that one?
Well, I think the pander line might have been a bit much, but...
Because I'd be outraged if it came out. We can
see how he judges that one.
It's a
pander your way out there, big boy.
It's a real nice domestic beer that's got 3% alcohol. Like, you drink a lot while watching NASCAR. Ken Carmen Pilsner. It's not a Pilsner. It'd be just like a. Anyways,
it would sell.
Gardo's got the win.
I'd drink it.
Good job out of the Gardo's series win, and they sweep the Mets and. We're now getting to the point where, and I warned of this yesterday, you're starting to get close enough to the wild card where all of a sudden the wild card and maybe the division are going to start to be the expectation again.
Well, and so I like the idea that even just within the all the tweets and everything after this week, I like the idea that people are scoreboard watching once again. Like, it's like now the Tigers are down to six games. You're six games in back of Detroit now in the AL Central. Just little things like that are starting to pop up and have popped up in the previous few days, and I like that.
In the middle of the show, in the 3 o'clock hour, where we're like trying to do like the gymnastics of like, do we move Ashley Bastock or do we keep her there and then hold the audience over to talk a couple segments afterwards about Gavin Williams? Because that's a no-no that was a no in the end. Mac was like, Tigers are down X amount of this. Or, hey, you know, they're only, if this happens and this happens, and it was a lot, by the way, in the middle of the show. We love Mac, but it was good because he's our numbers guy.
It was a lot.
At the same point, like, that does speak to the excitement of, all of a sudden, you're telling me there's a chance.
I mean, now, if I see one more person say the objects may appear close, or maybe, what is it? Objects may, why can't I get this?
No, Mac, remember what he did to you yesterday.
Objects may seem closer than they appear.
Okay, Meatloaf, I don't think that's quite it. No, Mac, don't help him. Do you remember what he did yesterday with the WNBA?
Objects may appear closer than they are.
Very close. Very close. That's not the Meatloaf song, though, if that's what you're going for.
I was going for 2 out of 3 ain't bad, and I think we hit 2 out of 3 right there.
I was going for Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
I thought it was the New York Post.
Let's call back.
He was so layered, though. It was like, you always do the hat on a hat. That was like a joke on a joke on a joke right there. You had to also pay attention to all 5 hours of every show we've done in the previous 3 weeks to get every successive joke.
This was better, though. I'm not just going to turn this into crap it on Mac. I'm not doing that. I'm not giving you the Mitch treatment. I love you. You tried something. It's arguable if it worked, but you tried something. We appreciate that. Keep trying, little buckaroo.
Yeah, you just keep taking shots.
Much like you with that expression.
Objects may appear closer than they are.
I think that one sounds right to me.
That one sounds right to me.
Yeah. Tell me
what it is.
Objects in the mirror appear closer than they really are. But if it's just
I don't think that's what they actually have written on the actual mirror.
I know. I'm just kind of enjoying you spinning your tires.
I didn't really spin my tires at all. I thought I had it right to begin with, and we're just kind of keep going. Not in the slightest bit. You guys know when I spin my tires.
I think you're spinning your tires.
It's obvious when I'm spinning tires.
A little bit of tires.
6:30 calmness you can only dream of.
Jake, avoiding having to criticize you is walking down to the bathroom now because he knew he was the next guy I was calling for. Jake's acting while he's walking down the hall like he's on his phone because he doesn't want to have to admit you were spinning your tires.
Objects in mirror are closer than they appear. We had it the whole entire time. You guys didn't seem like it. In the words of John Fanta, you guys are special.
One of us is special. The Guardians now 6 games back in the division. They're 4 games above 500. And in the wild card spot, I'm pulling over here. They are, speaking of spinning tires, they're 1.5 games back off the Yankees for the final spot there. And I will say, this was a good win. I know the Mets had been banged up, not banged up. They had lost a couple games before this. That's still a good team. This was a series that was in question when you came into the series. You got the sweep, and now you're onto the White Sox, and it does feel like, hey, if you take 2 or 3 or if you sweep the White Sox, all of a sudden you'd be sitting in the catbird seat for the wild card spot.
The concern I have is I don't know that the catbird seat is going to become available, mainly because I'm still scared that the Texas Rangers actually did things at the deadline and are a better team. The Yankees right now, they had a comeback win today. It was interesting to see them show some actual life support, but I think the Yankees are a better team than you. I think the Mariners are a better team than you. They made the deadline deals. I think the Red Sox are a better team than you. There's too many roadblocks in place, even if they are trying to make this competitive. And I can appreciate that they're at least trying to make this competitive, though.
I think there are people rooting for the Guard in this town who are so pissed about the deadline, who are so pissed about the idea that they would trade Steven Kwan, that want the Guardians to miss the playoffs. Because if they make the playoffs and even win a series or go to the ALDS with the way they've approached the season, the Guardians will feel validated. And
which, by the way, if you have that thought process, then you haven't paid attention to this Guardians team in a decade.
Yes, the Dolans aren't suddenly going to be like, man, did we get that wrong? Let's give them another $50 million here.
They do not care. I don't know, it's been proven time and time again. They don't alter their plans. They don't change what their thinking and their logic is based off of results in the slightest bit. If you miss the postseason by a half a game and you could actually prove that by doing nothing at the deadline, you cost yourself the playoff appearance, it would not change their viewpoint in the slightest bit. The same way, if you made the postseason, it won't then have them being like, oh, we did it the right way and look at what we didn't need to do. They don't care about that stuff. They just don't.
They don't. And I think that's why, I don't think people realize, I don't think those fans specifically realize what an accomplishment this would really be. And you can say you have problems with the Dolans. You can say you have problems even with Chernetti because they've not been perfect recently. But for this team to go where they were right before the All-Star break, and I know they had the little, they kind of averaged out the winning after the 10-game losing streak. They looked dead in the water halfway through June and then going into July. By the way, I give them a chance. I'm still at about 25% chance that they're going to claim a wild card spot. That's a really healthy spot here because there's on top of the 3 teams ahead of you, there's another 2 or 3 teams behind you that are all kind of in that mix and have as good a chance as anybody else.
I mean, it's crowded. There's no other way to look at it. It's crowded, and I think there are teams that are better than you that are ahead of it right now. But the target goal still exists. 87-88 wins will get you into this wild card dance. Like, if you look at it and just remove yourself away from the Yankees, from the Mariners, from the Rangers, from the Royals, all these other teams that are floating around you, and just say, I got to get to 87-88 wins and I'll have my ticket punched, then that's what you got to shoot for. And the Guardians have that in play. They definitely do, especially after this recent stretch.
Keith, by the way, sent both you and I, objects in mirror are closer than they appear. I think we might have annoyed him with that one.
I know. I could tell. I annoyed myself with that one too, though. But you all just kind of let me keep going.
It was pretty funny to me.
It was the type of
I know
thing.
It's a chotch thing. It's been a five-hour show.
That's it.
At some point, we do things to amuse ourselves here, even if it annoys Keith or several people listening.
Well, I had made the mistake of telling you that, because we surmise sometimes Daryl's an energy vampire.
Yeah.
And in between the last break, in a rare moment, I was like, you know what? It's just really getting me today.
And
I'm just a little exhausted
you
today.
You just never know.
And so if you're exhausted and you let a co-host just kind of try to figure it out for themselves when they're exhausted, that's not great.
Yeah, no, but that was just, it was Daryl's fault. It was the energy vampire. If anybody's watched What We Do in the Shadows, that does make Daryl Colin Robinson 100%. Five of you get that joke, but five of you will understand. DC saying, you're not wrong on your beer take. Morning show is college beer volume, and take what you can get mentality. I almost landed the plane there. And then Gene saying, Bucky's is the spot for jerky. I can't drive to Dayton when I get the need. And by the way, somebody mentioned a spot that's in Medina and I think Litchfield. It's good. It's good, but it's not Max. You understand, like, my bar for jerky, it's like Bonnie Blue's bar for, like, a good night out.
Non-existent is that bar, some would argue.
You're not going to out-freak this freak, okay? Like, I
she's got a really low bar is part of the point. That's, like, her whole shtick is the lowest bar possible.
Should I have gone Lily Phillips? Should I have done that one?
I think both of them
are just names that I've heard. I don't really practically know any of them, of course.
That's why it didn't hit.
I want it bad.
That's why I can't land the plane on these analogies. No, it's too boku. I need a boku. I need a truly great jerky spot. Not a really good one. I keep trying.
I hope somebody someday delivers you that great jerky spot. I want us to get the show jerky. I'd like the show jerky. I like the show beer better, but I like the show jerky.
216. By the way, to recap what we were talking about earlier, I've gotten 5 texts from my daughter, Issy, who not only wants me to pick iced tea up on the way home, but has now sent 4 straight talking about ice cream as well. So,
are you going to do it?
Probably. I got a lot of time in between picking up the oldest kid. But definitely, maybe not ice cream, because that might melt. But 216-474-0092. We will take your jerky submissions there. Are the Guardians impressing you? I really think what they're doing is incredibly impressive, and maybe this is the homer mentality. I think 25% chance to make the playoffs, I think, is a hell of a chance considering where they were 6 weeks ago, in case you missed it, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Yeah.
It's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Coming up at noon, our Browns beat reporter Daryl Ryder will join us as the Browns getting ready to take on those feisty Carolina Panthers tomorrow night. I still think they have the best uniforms in the NFL. I love their unis.
Really?
I think they're great, yeah. And almost any of their color schemes are really cool. I think they're colors.
Who has the best uniforms in the NFL?
That's another segment.
Another segment. Yeah. I can't even think about that. Hmm.
Gavin Williams yesterday almost has a no-hitter, and he was outstanding. Logan Allen has been terrific this year. Slade Ciccone has stepped up and done a really nice job, and Tanner Bibee gives you a chance to win every time he goes out. The Guardians are catching up. They're getting after it right now. They're 6 games behind in the division. You want to look at the wild card? They're knocking on the door. They're a game and a half from tying the Yankees right now for the last wild card spot. 2.5 from being the number 2 team. In other words, playoffs are still a real possibility for this team. If this team is going to win in the postseason, if it happens to get there, Andy, I think it's a safe assumption to say that they're going to have to win in the postseason with pitching. With that thought in mind, you've seen what's happened this year.
Yep.
You're Stephen Vogt. last year you managed 10 playoff games, and you had three guys start 9 of those 10 games.
Okay.
Tanner Bibee started 4 playoff games last year.
Okay.
Matthew Boyd started 3.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Cobb started 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Gavin Williams started 1 last year.
Yep.
So he basically went with a 3-man rotation and then threw in Gavin Williams when, you know, it was called for because of, you know, the way the schedule played out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was mainly 3 guys. Who are your 3 starters for the playoffs this year?
Bibee, Williams, Ciccone. Not even questioning it. I mean, obviously Logan Allen has a legit kind of talk that you can put him at. But for me right now, it's Bibee, Williams, Ciccone.
In that order?
I want to watch Williams Bitches next outing. Maybe I start him game 1. I feel comfortable with any 3 of those guys. Maybe Bibee in game 1 just because he's got the experience, a little bit more experience, and it's how important it is to win the first game of a series. So it'd be Bibee, probably Williams, then Ciccone. I love Ciccone. So.
Yes, we're well aware.
Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, you love the name Slade.
That's right, where you had me at Slade.
And then you love what the guy's done. He's been terrific.
And gets better every time he pitches.
If I had to pick 3 starters
right now,
in order, I'll give you an order even.
Okay.
It would be Gavin Williams. It would be Slade Ciccone. And then I think it would be Logan Allen.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I think Logan Allen, man, I really like Tanner Bibee. Don't get me wrong. I like the lefty thought. I'm guessing that whoever you go up against, having a lefty start might be a really good thing. And I love the way Logan Allen competes on the mound. I mean, he doesn't back down from anybody. And Tanner's had a little bit of an issue this year, giving up home runs. And I would have him ready to roll, I think. And you know, you'd have to convince him of this, obviously. But again, you already paid him. I think I'd have him ready to go as my long man. And I might do something like, hey, Logan, you're going 3. We're not going to, maybe 4 innings. We're not going to let guys get a third look at you. And then Tanner, hey, Tanner, get ready. You're going 3 or 4. I might do something like that. Or I'd have Bibee ready to come in at a moment's notice for Gavin Williams in that first start or Slade Ciccone in that next start. The thing of it is, Andy, I think they have 4 legit pitchers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you wanted to go with a 4-man rotation, although Vogt didn't do that last year in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
you've got your 4. And you could make Cantillo that long guy.
I would never walk into a game thinking that I would be scared to let a pitcher go through the third time in the rotation or a third time through the lineup. If they're hot, they're hot. I don't care. If you want to see them for a third time and they've dominated, I'm going to let them go back through. I hate to even put that into a pitcher's mind. Well, you're not going to see this lineup for a third time. So I just, you know, you may want
to. Well, you don't have to tell them that.
But. Right. But I just like that whole notion, like. If a guy's pitching, like we knew Gavin Williams yesterday was pitching amazing, and so you just don't want to pull. Now I would say normally you're right though, Jeff, that you don't want to see that. You don't want to face a guy for a third time in a game. I get it because it might be. Is it advantage batter? Probably.
And they especially do that in the playoffs too. Really, really pay attention to it.
So I'm okay with what you're saying. Nothing tops experience. And I thought you made the case for Bibee when you were explaining it in the beginning about how he went through the rotation last year and how many starts Bibee got last year. There is just something about knowing what it's like to pitch in the playoffs and have a little bit more experience that gives someone an edge, for me at least. Gives them the edge on whether I'm starting them, depending on where that is and what game it is.
Dennis is in Lakewood. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, Dennis. Dennis Martinez. On
hey,
the
how you guys awesome. Doing?
Hey, good. We're good.
I don't
good.
Think it's Dennis Martinez.
We were close. Okay.
Or Eckersley.
Yeah.
I was just curious. Would you have pulled Len Barker because he was pitching a no-hitter, a perfect game in May?
I wouldn't have pulled Gavin Williams yesterday, Dennis, if you listened.
No, I did listen. Okay. And I said I'd have left him out there.
And no, I wouldn't have pulled Len because he threw 102 pitches in the perfect game.
No batter saw a third ball in that game, in that perfect game. Isn't that amazing? No batter saw a third ball. That's why that game so
Lenny threw 102 pitches. And things are different in this day and age in pitching, Dennis, unfortunately.
Well, how are things different? I'm sorry.
Have you heard of the Tommy John injury?
I have heard of it. Have you heard of the Bob Feller theory of strengthening your arm?
Well, and I did, and Bob didn't last as long as he should have. Part of it was the war, and part of it was he blew out his arm.
Did he really? I didn't know that.
He did.
I thought he pitched for like 15 seasons, which is pretty remarkable.
He did, but look at what he did the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that was my only point, because I wouldn't have pulled Len,
but Len didn't have a real high pitch count in that game. Guys, pitching is, take a look at it. It's an epidemic of elbow injuries because organizations, colleges, high schools, it's all about velocity, and these guys are blowing out their arms, and you have to protect it.
Bob had 279 complete games.
They just went forever, Andy.
That is unbelievable.
He wasn't alone, though.
No, I know.
I mean, they used to do that. You went out and you pitched. But look at the last several years of Bob's career. Bob was not the same type of pitcher. And I remember him saying he threw a curveball and he felt it and it was like, uh-oh. And he wasn't the same pitcher ever again. Was he still good? Yeah, he was still good. But he wasn't Bob Feller good. And that's just the way things go. A guy, to me, the biggest aberration in pro sports, all of pro sports, I think, is Nolan Ryan. Nolan threw gas until he was like 45, 46 years old.
Wow.
His entire career, he threw gas. And he never had a huge major arm injury.
You want to guess who the last pitcher was to have 100 or more complete games? The last pitcher?
Greg Maddux.
Oh, you actually said his name in the segment already.
Who?
Dennis Eckersley.
It was Dennis?
Yeah. That is amazing to me you're right about how the game has changed. Wow. That's insane.
And I hate it because pitching is more than throwing hard. Pitching is knowing how to get guys out. And unfortunately, for kids to get noticed, usually it's velocity. You know, the Guardians are a little different than most teams because they look at how a kid can spin the ball. And if you, Shane Bieber's a perfect example. Shane was throwing like low 90s when he was in college, like 90, 91. And the Guardians liked how he threw the ball, how he could spin it, control it. And they thought, we can add 3 or 4 miles an hour to this guy. Well, they drafted him. They added 3 or 4 miles an hour to him. And you had Shane Bieber. But, too often you see guys who can go out and throw it like absolute crazy, might not know where it's going, and then might get injured. And it's a different way of thinking than it used to be. And Bob Feller's way of thinking where you throw, I agree with it. I think it's great. But that's not what they do anymore. Take a look at the number of guys. In fact, we had Ron Darling on the show. What, Dano? About a month and a half ago?
Yeah.
2 months ago when Ron said this.
We were doing a game. They played a game on Fox.
And I mentioned to Ron that
CBS.
He pitched, I think it was like 8 years in a row where he threw 200-plus innings.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of Major League Baseball last year, I believe the number was 3. Might have been 4 guys.
That was CeCe's goal every year. Every year it was like, I'm not going to throw 200 innings.
That was common for a starting pitcher. Now it's a rarity when a starting pitcher throws 200 innings in a season. And Bob Feller used to do it all the time. Take a look at Bob threw 300 plus innings in a season all the time. There were 4 guys, Dano? There were 4 guys last year who threw 200 plus innings in Major League Baseball. That was commonplace in the old days. And why are there so many injuries now? And it's the same injury for the most part. Is it because they're not throwing enough? Maybe. Is it because they're throwing with such high stress velocity and putting so much stress on that ulnar collateral ligament? That might be it, too. Is it a combination of the two? That might be it, too. But teams have to watch it like crazy now because there's so much money invested in pitching.
Since 1999, there's only been one pitcher in the American League that has had more than that's had double digit complete games. That was James Shields in 11. He threw 11. The last time in the American League a pitcher had more than four complete games in a season was Irving Santana and Corey Kluber in 2017. It's weird when you look at complete game numbers.
It's a different world.
And how they dropped as once we put a 2-0 on the date rather than a 1-9, everything dropped.
And now if you go five innings, you turn it over to the bullpen.
Bert Blyleven was the last guy in the American League to have 20 or more complete games. He had 24 back in, what year was that? 85.
Who would your rotation be for the Guardians in the playoffs? Last year, Stephen Vogt used three guys, and then one guy made one start. Something funny about all that coming up next on Baskin and Phelps.
I had an inkling at where Tigers fans were when my boy Jim Costa of the Ticket in Detroit, we actually texted each other at the same time without, no, like, I started to text him, and before I could hit send.
You saw the bubbles?
I just saw his tweet come in, or his text come in, where he's like, how are Guardians fans, you know, feeling this right now? And I was like, oh, no, I think we're back. I think we've done this weird thing where it was like we started out with sky-high expectations. They fell short of those expectations. There was a lot of anger. Then there was maybe that apathy. And then after the apathy, it felt like all the expectations were let go, and now people are just riding the good vibes here. And that's the opposite with the Tigers.
Yeah, so the Tigers right now are in a little bit of a free fall. I think they're 17 and 24 over the last 40, somewhere in that stretch. They have Javi Baez became an all-star and then all of a sudden forgot how to hit a baseball. Green.
Okay, in fairness, he only remembered how to hit a baseball for like 80 games in the last 3 or 4 years.
But those 80 got him an all-star starting appearance this year, okay? Fair. Riley Green, their best player in the past 25 games, has been playing about as well as Austin Hedges has at the plate, okay? Like, they've had a lot of their offense has completely just disappeared throughout this stretch. And so, if you're a Tigers fan, you almost have to wonder if what's happening to them is the same thing that happened to the Twins last year. Remember, the Twins started off, I'm not going to say as hot as the Guardians, but they were a game and a half out of first place on July 31st at the deadline, and then they finished 10 games under 500 the rest of the stretch. Like, they nosedived. They absolutely plummeted and nosedived. And if you're a Tigers fan, I guess you got to wonder, is something like that happening right now with your team?
Well, where I slightly enjoy this, and again, Jim's my buddy. We've known each other for a while. I think he's incredibly talented. But I do enjoy that I was listening to that station when the Guardians were lose in the midst of that 10-game losing streak. And the Tiger take was, okay, the division's wrapped up, let's move on. Here was just a snippet. It was 4 hours of Motor City Kitty panic earlier today. And so here is Costa and Jansen panic with the Tigers from 97-1, the Ticket.
I would say we're on the edge of panic, collectively. He said a 6-game lead with 50 to go is still big.
It is still big. This is on the heels of what the Tigers did last year. Yeah. You need two teams to perform at the end of the year the way that they have it all season long.
Tech says panic in Detroit for sure. We're cooked. I watch about every game. Losing plays, bad games all around. That's Mark in Royal Oak.
But I think you got to define panic. Is panic we don't win the division, or is panic you don't win a game in the postseason?
Yeah, look, they didn't do enough at the deadline. I don't think they're a serious World Series contender. They didn't conduct themselves as such. From that standpoint, sure, I'm panicked that they're going to waste what was a great first half of the season and they won't contend for a World Series. I'm not panicking about losing this division. And that doesn't mean I'm blind to what's going on. We gave people the numbers. They've dropped 6 of the last 7 series.
I'm looking forward to Anthony Lima doing a full 20 minutes on why Jim Costa is being negative about the Tigers when he should just be happy tomorrow morning. But I think there's a sweet spot here that I think, I actually think it's 6 games with 50 plus games to go. Tigers fans panicking, I think it's a little, and I know it's easy to say when you're in the midst of the drought, I think they're going to be able to pull the nose up on this. It just matters when they're going to do it. So I think they're a little early to panic.
They still, Fangraphs has them at a 93.5% chance to win the division. Like, they are still the large favorites to win the Central at this point.
And like 50 games with 6 games to go, like by the end of August, you need to be like 2 games out for me to really count you in on this division, or, you know, in between 2 games up and over. But I look at this and go, I think the sweet spot should be Tigers fans should be worried, but not panic. They should still be confident about the division. And Guardians fans right now, until you claim one of those wild card spots or until you are within two games of the Tigers for the division, I think we should be focusing on wild card and like let that take care of itself first.
No question. Now, if I was trying to give advice to Tigers fans out there, I would use the Guardians from last year as the team that you want to almost emulate because they Guardians of last year got off to such a hot start and they were so great. And then they went 27-27 in their final 54. They played 500 ball and then they got in the postseason and it was almost like a reset and you found your way in the ALCS. So, like you can if you're a Tigers fan, that's what you have to latch on to is that the next month and a half of baseball doesn't have to define who you are in the postseason.
Yeah, there's a part of me that thought it would be kind of funny or interesting how sometimes teams can mimic each other from year to year. That'd be really interesting if the Tigers had this skid and then in like September pulled the nose up just enough to take the division.
And if the Guardians do what the Tigers did last year.
The Guardians are in the wild card spot.
We just kind of flip spots.
And then we see them in the ALDS again. Like so, that. Yeah. There's a part of me that would like that symmetry, even though you'd be on the losing end of this scenario.
Hey, whatever outcome ends with us just hitting a home run off Schuble in a game five. That'd be the one I want.
I think in this case
is it off of Gavin Williams?
I think so. Or Slade Ciccone, the other ace, one of those two aces. I was a little embarrassed for our friends in Detroit, not Jim and John.
Well, they had a 15.5 game lead at one point in the Central.
Yeah.
Like, that's supposed to be locked down. That's supposed to be as tight as it gets. But here's why they're panicking a little bit is because they know the offense has come down to earth for this Tigers team. Like the guys that they got contributions from early aren't contributing now. And there's actual panic that sets in when you don't have a good enough bullpen to begin with anyway. They're still waiting for Seawald to even get healthy to be their trade chip that they acquire and have it all work out. And you just can't ride this enough on the arms of Schuble.
216-474-0092. Are Tigers fans right to be sweating right now? In fairness, I think if this was flipped, we would also be sweating. I mean, I think Guardians fans were pretty nonplussed about the struggles until about, I mean, heck, when the Tigers caught fire in mid-August, is when you started to kind of get that, and not panic, but that concern from Guardians fans last year.
I mean, it was odd. Last year was odd. I felt like I was the only one that kept yelling 27-27 or even throughout that stretch that like, hey, things weren't awesome because it was such a great start. And I think people just wanted to relish in that.
Yeah, I mean, it, kind of similar to the Detroit thing. You had such a cushion. I just look at this. And again, like my focus is not the division yet. It can be. But at this point, like, because what I don't want to have happen, and I think it's really easy for us to get ahead of ourselves because even though there are the people out there who just want to complain about the Dolans, that 1%, that 3% that I always snark at, are you really a Guardians fan? Whatever. I think most people, that like the vibe when the Guardians are good, because it's the summer, because the weather's great, like it is just, it's hard to match that excitement with just about anything else. So, like, I think we want to get excited about the Guardians as soon as we can because we also know how wide open baseball is. That's awesome. I'm focused on the wild card. And when the division feels in reach,
focused on whichever one gets you the easier path in. And right now, the easier path in remains the wild card. It's not a guarantee that at the end of the season, the wild card is actually the easiest path in because if the Tigers do go downward, 85, 86 wins could end up sealing this. Mm-hmm. Where I think a wild card appearance is going to be at 87, 88. So we'll be able to reexamine and get it as we go.
It kind of wouldn't surprise me if where the Tigers are now, if they continue this for two or three more weeks, it's going to be the same number. You know, like you could be fighting for the division and the wild card and end up a half game out of both. And by the way, that's not just the Guardians, that's the Tigers as well. And that's what like I think maybe the thing that, like, even just talking about this, I'm getting super excited about mm-hmm. is this could be one of those stretch runs where, you know, this was a very frustrating season. We had the Ortiz and Class A thing, which I think is even more frustrating than watching this offense. We had the offense just be nothing for 90 games. And then, you know, we could look up and they're in the ALDS and they have a decent chance to get to the ALCS again.
It's a possibility. Like, it's on the table, but
they could also be out of the playoffs.
That's the sad part about this. Like,
if you were to make me bet
right now, which one I think is going to happen, I'm still betting in the idea that they're not going to end up getting to the playoffs and they'll fall, let's even say, just short of what the Tigers end up at being at, or just short of what the wild card ends up being at. But the idea that they've even pulled themselves up and been able to get it back in this spot after the 10-game losing streak, that alone is impressive enough to me.
Let's go with Lewis and Shaker. Welcome to the show, Lewis. Are Tigers fans right to be sweating right now?
Oh, yes. I mean, have you seen? Okay, I don't know how many games we got left. I'm assuming we got like 47.
It's 50 plus. It's like 52 games left, I think.
All right, so I was playing the schedule game before I left home today. We have a light schedule, man. If we got, okay, I'm just going to say we have 47 games. I know it's a little bit more. The Guardians can go like 30-17 or 31-16, man, in these next games, man. We can catch Detroit, man. I think we can catch them, man. Our schedule is really light. It's not that bad. We got Detroit coming up. But a lot of teams we're playing is below 500. I mean, I think Detroit fans should be sweating, man. I think we're going to catch them, man.
Okay, so the only thing I would say is Detroit is a very light August themselves. Like this August, they've got an opportunity to get right simply because they play a lot of the same bad teams you play.
Ooh, so, you know.
How did I deflate your confidence that easily, Lewis?
Say it with your chest. Come on, man.
I played the Detroit, game. I was just looking at us. Thank you very much, Nick. I mean, I still think we can catch them, though, man. I hope they do.
I appreciate you.
I mean, the Tigers at one point were 25 games over 500. It felt like everything they did, like the Flaherty move came back to seem like it was an awesome decision. Torres was all of a sudden an all-star, and that was their only offseason pickup of note outside of Flaherty. Like every string that they were pulling, even Baez, dead cat bouncing back to life in his career, like everything they were doing was just working. And now it's interesting because baseball does this, whereas baseball will just correct back to the norm, and they're just getting slapped in the face daily.
So when I think it comes to the division or even the wild card, I think you're where we should be, which is I think it can happen, but if push comes to shove, we shouldn't expect it at this point. I really do. Like, I think we have to be fair to the Tigers because they've been their bigger sample size right now is their greatness this year, and your bigger sample size is being a 500 team this year. But I think the next week or two should really decide when we start thinking about playoff tickets and what when all of a sudden we can truly set expectations for this team. Because if, let's say 2 weeks from now, so right around the last week and a half, 2 weeks of August, if you're within three games or if you're in a wild card spot, yeah, I think it's okay. I don't want to go overboard because I still don't know we can have expectations in the playoffs with this offense. But do I think that's when we can really start to dial into, let's not just win the wild card, but let's win the whole damn division? I think that's the sweet spot.
I mean, the offense has to show us what they showed us throughout that stretch, that month stretch where they legitimately were one of the better offenses in baseball.
216-474-0092. Are you giving the Guardians a decent chance to go ahead and make a real run at this division? They are six games below the Detroit Tigers. You heard some of that Tigers panic, and the recent numbers suggest the Guardians are onto something. That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.